We've now got our next guest coming on, the People Show, presented by Grip Auto and Tire, quality service you can trust and 14 locations to serve you. We welcome in Elliot Friedman, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet, and 31 Thoughts. And he took the last 2 weeks off to make sure that they got that Manscaped commercial just right on the last podcast.
Yeah, you know what? I think I would just say, it wasn't only the commercial that took me 2 weeks, Dan.
All right, Elliot, could you please answer this honestly? How many takes did that commercial take?
One.
Really?
One. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And initially, I'll tell you, it was reversed. Jeff and I were playing different parts, but I'd done a lot of goofy stuff lately, and I was like, okay, there's a limit to how much goofiness I'm going to do. So for that particular one, I just asked to reverse it. But we are master thespians, true students of the theater, and we got it done in one take.
Impressive.
I didn't know you took so many acting classes, Friedge, but you're
basically what I do now is acting, so it kind of works.
That's the type of year it's been, Elliot. So, do you think the Rangers were acting with their statement, or are they actually mean they want George Perros fired?
No. It's interesting. It's like I said to someone just a few minutes ago, guys, it's like pro wrestling. You know, we don't see this in hockey very much. This is like pro wrestling. And for me, it's very James Dolan, the owner of the Rangers and the Knicks. He's battled with the NHL before. Remember a few years ago, he sued them over, I think it was the websites, or if I remember correctly. But, you know, the Ligon and Dolan have battled before. And if you know anything about him, that sounds like to me it's coming right from the owner. And, you know, I think some of it is definitely defending his players. He wants to let his players know that he's got their backs. And, you know, I think he legitimately didn't like what happened last night. I wasn't expecting this. I mean, when I saw it, it was a wow moment for me. But, you know, the more I thought about Jim Dolan and how he'd feel, and, you know, basically the way he is unafraid to do things like that, I don't know if I would say I'm not surprised, because I was surprised, but I can see it.
Well, we know how the Rangers feel about this, but how does the NHL feel about the statement? And the last time, I think back in 2013, Doug Wilson made some comments after Rafi Torres' hit on Jarrett Stoll. They got dinged for $100,000. Is that what we're expecting here, or something similar?
I would expect that there would be something. Like, I've sent a note. I haven't heard back yet. You know, don't forget, it happened not long before this hit. So I don't know, A, if the NHL knew about it in advance. And B, I'm sure they're going to be collecting their reaction. So I haven't had a response from them yet. I figure you've got to see a fine there somewhere. You know, as for Perros himself, you know, someone made a good point to me that if you really want George Perros out, that's not the way to do it. Like, Gary Bettman is going to look at that, and he's going to get his back up, and he's going to say, you think you're going to bully me into moving out someone? Not a chance. So I would say there's even less chance, unless Perros wanted to go, I would say there's even less chance of, you know, the league wanting to make a move after something like that. It's someone who knows Bettman, and the more I thought about it, knowing Bettman myself, it's a really good point that that's not the kind of thing that he would respond to or allow to intimidate him into something different.
Are we overblowing this? I mean, I think when we look at scrums in front of the net, I mean, we're getting ready for the playoffs. This is going to happen on every other shift, you know? It's maybe not to this extent, but if it's anybody other than Artemi Panarin, are we reacting the way that we have?
You know, Dan, that's a great question, and I thought about that a lot today. Before I wrote my notes on it, you know, I took a lot of time to think about it because I wanted to attempt to come out with a good take. You know, I think for me, there's always been kind of an understanding, you know, whether you feel about the code or not. And I know there was a big debate there last weekend with Edler and Simmons. One of the things that's always been kind of understood about it, and I've worked with guys like PJ Stock and Nick Kyprios who did that job. And they talked about how, you know, there are times you've got to know that enough's enough. That, you know, you're fighting somebody who's defenseless, or you're taking on someone who's not capable really of doing the job. And you have to understand that you reach a point where you say, this isn't what it's supposed to be about. And what I saw last night was something that it wasn't supposed to be about. You know, it was a power. First of all, there's how many guys in the league are really even able to deal with Wilson? That's not entirely his fault. That's just the way it is. But last night, they're killing a penalty. You look at who's on the ice. There's nobody on the ice who's capable of dealing with him. And I just thought he went too far. I don't think that's what it's supposed to be. You know, some people said to me, well, Panarin jumped him. No, he didn't. He was trying to defend his teammates. And it reached a point where Wilson knew that this guy was not going to be able to handle him. And the other thing I really think of, too, Dan, is that so that part of it bothered me. And the other thing I think, too, is that, you know, like it's sort of like the whole thing. You know, when the Bertuzzi thing happened, I just remember the whole thing with the NHL, and it was all over CNN and things like that. And, you know, you don't want that. You just got a new TV deal. You're heading into the playoffs. You want a positive point to your season. There's some good things to talk about. Why risk something? Like, this was all over TMZ today. It's like they let go of Tim Peel because they're protecting the shield. Like, if you're going to protect the shield, protect the shield. You can say to Tom Wilson, hey, if you're making a big hit, fine. If you're protecting a teammate, fine. But, you know, it's like the old line about pornography, Dan. I can't often define it, but I know what it is when I see it. I looked at that thing last night and I said, that's not right. That's not what protecting the game is supposed to be about.
So, Elliot, when it comes to this,
you guys can tell me if you think I'm wrong, but that was just my opinion.
No, I kind of felt I felt the same way. I thought something should have happened. I wasn't sure they should throw the book at Tom Wilson, but I thought, okay, maybe a game or two or something to say this is not acceptable. But where are we in this paradigm shift that we are seeing in the NHL here, where, you know, these things are starting to get stamped out, but not completely? I know you've talked about how the league does want some of the hatred back. They want to have those rivalries. But it seems like we're in the midst of that paradigm shift, and we're still not quite there yet. And we see this friction between one side that wants to see us progress more and one side that kind of wants us to not let go of that hatred in the game, too, and wants to encourage some of it.
Well, I don't know if I want to encourage it, but I do think that I do like the hatred in the game. And I still do think, Seth, that intimidation is a big part of sports, particularly at this time of year. And I don't know if I ever want that to go away. You know, I think that there are people out there who like to challenge themselves. Like, you know, I'm not really in a job where I challenge myself physically like that. But I think a lot of the people who play sports like to challenge themselves physically against the people, whether they're male or female, standing on the opposite side of the line of scrimmage for them. I think people like that. And, you know, I think at this time of year, if you're a fan of the Vancouver Canucks, like, you know, why did you guys love the 2011 team? Why do you guys love the 94 team? Pick the teams that go down in Canucks history. And, you know, it's because you as fans thought that those players felt the exact same way about the Vancouver Canucks as you do. That when they went out there on the ice, they gave, win or lose, they gave everything they had to be Canucks. Like a week ago when they came out of their COVID outbreak and they had those two wins over Toronto, like everybody out there was ecstatic. And it was because you're sitting there and you're thinking, these guys care as much about being Canucks as we want them to. And that's what, like, the toughness and the edge of sports brings sometimes, is that you will look at the person who's on the other side of you and you will run them over to win the game. And, you know, I don't know if I ever want that to go away. I want it to be played as cleanly and as tough as possible. And sometimes that line gets blurred. And I think last night that line got blurred, and I didn't like that, you know, they couldn't have done or didn't do more to him. But that doesn't mean that, like, I don't think that players with his ability should be banned. I think the thing that's happened is there used to be five guys like that on a team. Now there's not even five guys like that in the league. And, you know, I agree with the premise of the question. We have a problem with dealing with that.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Elliot Friedman. Elliot, there were some reports last week where maybe there was an expectation that, hey, Travis Green talks could pick up a little bit. I know you also mentioned that in 31 Thoughts in regards to maybe talks could pick up. But what came of that? Have they moved forward? Or are they still at a standstill?
You know, I got to tell you, Randy, when it comes to greeting the Canucks, I don't know how much negotiation there's been. Mm-hmm. I think there's been, like first of all, in the last couple of weeks, it's been absolutely crazy between the COVID outbreak, and I don't want to make light of what's going on around Jake Virtanen. That's a very serious situation. But there's a lot going on in the organization. And so I think it's very difficult at times to get accurate information about what's going on because there's so many different things happening, and I do understand that. But I have to tell you, you know, Randy, like, I don't know everything that goes along and goes around this league. I like to think I do, but I don't. However, the one impression I get out of this is I don't know that there's ever been a lot of conversation this year between Green and the Canucks about his future. And, you know, do I think that some offers have been thrown around here and there? Yeah, maybe a couple, but I don't ever sense it's ever gotten anywhere that there was real incredible traction that they were moving together on it. And, you know, I think the other thing here is look at the recent, like, one of the rules of business I like is the best indicator of future behavior is past behavior. And if you look at the Canucks in the last couple of years, a lot of their negotiations, you know, they try to use the pressure point of the deadline to get it done. And they wait and they wait and they wait. And then they get close to the deadline and they hope that the deadline is the pressure point to get something done. And in some cases, that's worked for them. And in some cases, it hasn't worked for them. Now, I suspect, Randy, that's a little different right now with Pearson and Hughes. I think they are trying to get something done there, but with some of their other people and Green, I think they have still followed that philosophy. And that's why I don't think as we do this right now, if a one phone call can change anything, that they've really had a ton of conversation with Green.
Elliot Friedman, our guest, it's long been thought that this wasn't a merit conversation. Like, we've all been thought pretty highly of the job Travis Green has done. It seemed like the Canucks have as well, and more a financial thing. Is that still the case in your eyes?
I do think that has a lot to do with it. You know, I think Green's done a good job there. I think we all see what's going on right now. You guys came back from that break, mm-hmm. and you guys were supercharged, and you played great and you caught Toronto, and, you know, now you're running out of steam and the schedule is tight. And I think the other thing that does happen in this league is it's really hard to score in the NHL when you don't have elite players or enough of them. And, you know, Pettersson being out, you can see how hard it is for you guys to score. So I don't have any issue with Green's coaching. I think he's done a good job. But I do think there's a difference in opinion between him and the team about worth. And I think the team would like him to be at a certain level. I think he sees himself as above that level. I do think part of it is motivated by the team saying we only want to go to a certain point. And I think part of that is also motivated by, I've talked about this with you guys before. I think there's a lot of teams in the league who feel that coaching salaries and executive salaries have gone way too far. And I think now, out of a pandemic, I think you're seeing a few organizations say, we're putting a halt to this right now. And I think Vancouver is one of them.
Elliot Friedman is our guest. His latest 31 Thoughts article available on sportsnet.ca and the 31 Thoughts podcast. The latest one is available, him alongside Jeff Merrick, on your favorite podcatchers. Now, as far as the financials go, one of the things that I think is going to be really fascinating, especially for an organization like Vancouver, because we have seen the track record in the pandemic this past year with the revenues and how they've approached things financially. What, I mean, it's too early to say, but what level of certainty is there that there will be any gate revenue in the first quarter of the season for Canadian teams next year and what the schedule is going to look like? And I wonder if that situation, that uncertainty, also plays a part into how this organization will move forward financially this offseason. Because you're right, they have to sign Pettersson, they got to sign Hughes, they felt they had to sign Demko and Pearson. Obviously, as a player, they felt they had to keep. I think players' salaries are different. But how much is the uncertainty for revenues next year, you think, playing a part in all this?
Sad, I think it plays a big part. You know, how could it not be? You know, one, like next year, we've already moved back the start of the season a week. I think that was partially because this year is going to end later. I think also, you know, some of the Canadian teams told me they can't imagine that the border won't be open by next October, but it doesn't hurt to give yourself a little bit extra time if you can. I do think it's a factor. You know, Toronto last week, they let go of their director of player development, the former NHLer Scott Pellerin. And, you know, from what I understand, that wasn't about a guy doing a bad job. I think Toronto is looking to, you know, do some things around its front office. And I think they were told you can't just add. Like, you have to hit a line. You have to have a budget. And I think if Toronto is a team that's being told that, who isn't? And, you know, that's because of where we are and we still don't have fans yet. Like, you know, I do think that, like, I think the Canadian teams that make the playoffs are going to start at home. CJ talked about that last weekend. I think they will start the playoffs at home. But I do think one of the things they were considering was if they had to put the four teams in the United States, where could they have gone where fans could have been there so maybe some revenue could have been made? Like, I do think those conversations were spitballed and had because, you know, they realized that not having the fans up here, it's an enormous challenge to revenues.
You mentioned Pettersson and Hughes earlier. Is that becoming more of a priority right now for the Canucks?
I do think it's I think it was something they were looking at when they got Demko done. Like, you know, we talked about how I think they had a block kind of put away. They said that this is kind of where we envision Hughes and Pettersson finishing up. And I think they've kind of had that in their eyes and in their mind. And, you know, I do think they're, I don't know. I wouldn't say it's close or anything like that, but I think they're working at it.
Elliot Friedman joins us every Tuesday here on The People Show. And, you know, I know maybe last night we're making a mountain out of a molehill, but Travis Green takes a few questions and gets away quickly from his post-game news conference. And, you know, I think about, you know, just how difficult this whole situation is. Now they've been losing a lot of games, and every game is really tough. You know, even when they play well, they're losing by a couple of goals. You know, I start to wonder how much things are wearing on this team and how that might affect a lot of, you know, players and coaches and their want to be here moving forward.
Well, I think, Dan, that's a very fair question, and it elicits two reactions. You know, last week, for example, I was working last Wednesday, the Montreal-Toronto game. So Montreal plays Friday, Saturday, Monday in Calgary. They lose the first two, they win the third one. And then, you know, 48 hours later, they've got to play Toronto at home. So they go across the country, they play Toronto, and Toronto's been off for 3 days and sitting there waiting for them. And I went on the air and I said, this is a schedule loss for Montreal. I said, you know, they it's going to take a ton for them to win this game. And they were down 2-0, 8 minutes in, and they lost, I think it was 4-1. And somebody sent me a DM saying, you know, stop making excuses for the players. They're heavily compensated. They're paid millions. They can suck it up. They don't have a real job. So I think there are people who look at it that way. I tend not to look at it that way. I mean, we all have challenges in life right now. Emotionally, this is not easy on any of us. You know, Dan, one of the things I've been told is that there are Canadian players on U.S. teams who live in Canada, and they don't want, like, the teams that are about to be eliminated, they don't want to come back to Canada after the season. They want to stay where they are in the U.S. because they don't want to come back to, like, the lockdown that we kind of have in a lot of Canada right now. And so I think what you're seeing is a lot of players, you know, you're not really allowed to do anything, and you're losing, and you can't, like, I have one guy on one team that's about to miss the playoffs. He says, you have no idea how much we all hate each other right now. And he says, we have a good group. Like, I do. I think it's an enormous drain, and losing sucks. Losing sucks when you can go to a movie. Losing sucks when you can go with your teammates to dinner. You know, we know that these guys are all asked not to do any of that right now. And I just think it's a huge grind. I really do. And Green is competitive, and those players there are competitive. They don't want to, what can they say? I understand what happens. I think dealing with the media is a responsibility, and you have to do it to the best of your ability. And I don't think you can do that every night. Like, I don't. But I understand why now it's happening a bit more than normal.
Elliot, final thing here before we let you go. And to me, it has to do with, you just mentioned, it's been such a tough season. And I'm sure if you put everything in context, some things can get explained away, and organizations have to make some tough decisions, and they really have to be introspective this year. That includes Vancouver. But how do you think a lot of teams are going to approach this season? Are they viewed as, hey, there's a lot of context here we have to keep in mind? Or do you think also some organizations saw it as a sobering reality of where they are and what they need to do moving forward?
Boy, I think that is a great question, Seth. Three of you guys have asked good questions today. I have to say, this is unusual for me in some of my
radio. Well, we haven't had you for like 2 weeks.
We've had two weeks to prepare.
Yeah, we're ready for this, Elliot.
I have to say, like, some of my radio hits are like the Titanic compared to this. So, you know, honestly, Sad, I think it's a really good question. I think one thing, and I do believe this a lot, you really learn a lot about someone in times like this. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we've all, like, there's nobody listening to this interview right now or your radio station who over the past year hasn't been ground down. Like, it's just, you know, our lives have come to a halt, and, you know, it there can't be days where it doesn't just get you. And I think it takes real fortitude to just grind your way through it from a mental point of view. Even if you don't have like a physically demanding job, just mentally getting through there, it's really hard. You know, I think that to me, I would be more like, who are the people who did well this year? I would put more stock in that than the people who didn't. Although I had one interesting comment about it, Sat, and they said to me was, one GM said to me, what we're looking at is who changed this year. Mm-hmm. Like, if you had somebody who was trending up and they fell off the cliff, we're going to determine why. Was that simply this, or was that the start of the trend? Or if you had someone who was trending down, and you were like, oh, God, this guy is it's coming to the end, and they did well this year, now they're thinking, wait a sec. Like, this player deserves an extra wide berth because he played well in very difficult circumstances. That, I think, to me, is probably the right answer, is whose direction changed this year, and why is that, and what does it mean?
Elliot, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you.
All right, guys. Have a great week. Speak to you next week.